All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Taz Talk, the show where we talk about the Adventure Zone podcast. Today, we're talking about episodes 3 and 4 of Taz Dust. Episode 4 was the final episode of this little arc.
I can't believe it's done already.
I know. Wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. I mean, it helps that we had like 2 episodes in one. Well, no, that's not true because then they skipped a week, too.
Yeah, it's. I think I'm just impressed that they wrapped it up so neatly in 4 episodes. Because when we were first starting, I was like, oh my god, there's so much information. How are they ever going to solve this mystery? But by the end of the 4th episode, I was like, huh, okay, yeah, I'm all right with this.
Yeah, they wrapped it all up. Yeah, it's weird because I was kind of hoping that there was going to be another episode because I knew we were going to do these two together. And so I wanted one more opportunity to, like, play junior detective with you, Chelsea, but we know who the bad guy was.
We do.
And
neither of us...
It was the sheriff.
Neither of us called it.
Connors. No, actually, when at the end of episode 3, okay, when they read the note, and it's like, don't trust Connors, I'm like, who is that?
Not gonna lie. Same. Because I kept just calling him, like, oh, the sheriff.
I know.
Yeah.
So then, I think at the beginning of episode 4, I think it was Griffin who, like, said Sheriff Connors, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, do you want to start with the whodunit part of it? I do have some notes on that, but we can do it chronologically, too, if you want.
I'm fine either way, I guess. I was just going to start at the beginning.
Let's start at the 3. Beginning.
Okay, so I have something funny to talk about.
Oh, yeah, I bet you do. Go ahead.
Well, it's just that there's, like, you know, kind of in joke in the fandom about, like, Griffin's in Devor, and normally I discount it. The evidence is tenuous at best. It just seems like a fun joke that the fandom has, like, whatever. But then that fucking scene where Clint's saying, like, well, getting eaten isn't fun for the sandwich, and then you hear Griffin go, like, well, maybe. And it's just like, Griffin, you kinky son of a bitch! The evidence is adding up, Griffin!
I didn't even catch that. Oh, that's good. I thought you were just gonna dive right in on the bell.
Oh my god, that scene was so fucking funny. Okay, so listen, episode 3 was fucking funny. It was one of those, like, I had to leave my office because I was, like, trying not to just, like, laugh in the middle of work. Yeah, the bell scene was hilarious. And I also like how it makes Errol come off as kind of, like, jumpy and paranoid, which is, I think, a fun character trait for him. Yeah. It sort of fits with the way I was imagining him.
Yeah, well, so the jumpy and paranoid part, I thought that he was doing it just based on the situation. I don't know that that's a character trait. Just because in every other situation, we've seen him kind of pretty cool and collected. And that's what I was trying to think about, like, the whole situation. Because if you hear the description, these two people who identify themselves as being with the Banshee, and the only thing you know about the Banshee is that you're trying to actively hide from them, and that they're super bad news, yeah, I'd be pretty jumpy, too. Travis was trying so hard to, like, calm Errol down and be like, you know, it's not that big a deal. It's okay. So Errol sounding out this alarm bell.
Oh god, it was so funny. And I love how it turned into, like, a repeating joke too, like something that Gandhi and Gus made fun of him for.
Oh,
hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah. I look forward to someone animating it. Like, I don't know if Louis Zong I don't know if he does Taz. I know that they do Mabim Bam, but
Yeah.
I envision it as, like, it's just the boys with different disguises on, like a mustache or, like, some glasses.
As they do the different voices.
Oh, I loved it. But did you hear while they were doing that bit that Griffin was growling in the background?
No.
Oh, man. Okay. Because I listened to it again last night, and there is a part of it where they're, like, just joking around, and then someone is like, so I was like, wait, was that Griffin? That's canon. That's Griffin.
I missed that.
I'll send you the timestamps.
Well, he is a half wolf man.
He is.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it was so funny. What was weird about that scene is, like, I didn't know what Travis's intentions were, and I didn't know if he was trying to, like, signal to Griffin without breaking character too much, like, you weren't in as much danger as you thought, or if he was really in character, those Ellis and whatever being like, oh, it's fine, but like secretly it wasn't fine.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure, really, like, that's an interesting thing, like trying to communicate information to your players, like meta gaming information, but trying to do it in like a realistic, like an in-character way. That's always an interesting conflict that happens.
Yeah, they could have easily... Thought... Oh, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, they could have easily just been like, dude, you can calm down. Like, I'm not going to do anything, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
But it was so much more interesting for them to be like, man, your character, like, you're a jumpy guy. It was a lot more interesting. Like, I can't imagine how that whole Banshee thing would have happened if Errol really was, like, alone. I like that they regrouped first and that they went over the clues and went about it as a team. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, that was cool. I wanted to talk about Gandhi getting feasted upon.
It was like a sandwich.
For a hot second.
Feast is a strong word.
Because, like, I don't know, it was weird. I was surprised that, like, she had no memory of the... I mean, that's like a hand-wavy kind of meta thing, too. Yeah. Like, let's not go deeply into this, like, erotic vampire moment with Gandhi and Isabella Swan. Although Travis tried to play it off as, like, not erotic.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was trying to say, like, you know, it's just eating. Let's not there's no need to romanticize it. But, like, actually, I would argue there's a pretty established history of sexualizing vampires in fiction, not just, like, a recent thing.
Oh, there totally
was. But going
was.
Back it to, is. Like, yeah, like, back to, like, Claremont and, like, the OG vampire stories hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
I would say, actually, the more recent trend in vampire fiction is making them out to be tragic heroes instead of just, like... bastard seducer evil guys.
We didn't really have any vampire characters this arc, except for Isabella Swan. Remind me, at the very very end, the scene with the banshee, was that that was her, right? Or was I like miss okay, good, because I couldn't
know. That was her. And I do want to, I can't tell if we're both just playing off of this joke or I do know her actual name is Isabella Slate.
Oh, listen, God.
Audience, don't worry.
No, I totally... That slipped my mind.
Sorry, Chelsea. I keep pulling this shit on you.
She called me out. Well, that was a self-call-out because you did it first, right? Oh, God.
Oh, man.
Okay, yeah. No, but not going to lie. Like, they interviewed the guy in the cage...
Yeah.
I was kind of thinking, like, well, he's been in a cage for, like, a while. How much is he really going to know? But he knew quite a bit. So I was thinking maybe he knows so much because Isabella, like, talks about it as she's eating
that's
her sandwich.
Totally possible. Yeah.
And then I was thinking, like, well, maybe she's the one who'd done it, but then why would she? Because I couldn't... See, and this was back before episodes 3 and 4. Because I'm pretty sure... Who did I suspect? Oh, I already forgot who I suspected in the last episode.
You were putting your money on Slate.
Was I? Because I wanted to. Like, thinking about it right now, I'm like, at the time, I would have expected something to have, like, linked her to the mystery.
Yeah.
But I think Travis... Oh, do you want to talk about the mystery now, or do you have anything else to mention?
I mean, we could just weave it in and out, baby. Let's just do it live.
All right, baby. I started
baby
to the Magic Tavern. Oh, it's good. Okay. I think Travis did a really good job of, like, you know, bringing up the clues and making it appear to be one character, and then bringing in a MacGuffin basically to, you know, lead them to the right direction. Yep. I think with mysteries, it's really hard to not railroad players. Because there's, in a mystery, like, there's a certain way things have to go. And some things are flexible, but some things aren't. So, but if you don't find everything, like, the mystery doesn't come together. And it, you know? So, and I think, going back to balance, in the 11th hour, Griffin has said that the boys did it in an opposite order of what he expected them to do.
Uh-huh.
It still worked out, but, like, he wasn't expecting it. So for him and Travis, while they're creating these stories to lay out these clues and locations and characters, and to have to just trust the players to pick up on the scent and, you know, wander around enough to figure out the mystery, I think it was really good storytelling. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I was impressed too, and I actually thought that this was like a very thematically strong little story that Travis put together here. It was super interesting how like the Banshee and the Sheriff Connors ended up being like two sides of the same coin. Like a kind of chaos versus law thing was going on here. And, you know, the Banshee said, I need things to be stable because then people come to me for advice. If everything's chaos, then like, I don't have a purpose. And the Sheriff straight up said, like, I need there to be a little chaos so people come to me for order.
Yep.
And it was like twisted in both directions. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. No, totally. I also was thinking, Travis did a good job at establishing like why the murder could have happened out of passion, which is like more, it was more for me to think that, oh man, it was totally Liam, but that doesn't make sense. Like his gloves were clean and that's too easy. Like I think Griffin said it in the episode, he was like, but that's what Travis wants us to think. So, but they, that whole time they were talking about, think about the deal. Think about like who benefits, who doesn't benefit, like who is going to lose out by this deal being brokered. When I first listened to the episodes, I kind of thought, I don't know enough about this deal. Like, I don't know what's happening. They keep talking about this deal, but I don't know what's actually happening for any of the players. So because of that, I can't tell who is losing out. And in a way, we still don't really know what the deal is. We just know that the deal is happening and that after the deal, order is going to come to the area and like a company is going to manage the mines and I guess that's what incorporated
means.
Well,
yeah, the deal is for the town to become incorporated, right?
Yeah.
So it wouldn't just be like a wild territory town. Anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be under like rule of law from some bigger system.
The law with like a capital L.
Yeah.
Is I think how they were like phrasing it. But that didn't strike me, I guess, when I was listening to the first two episodes. So that's why I remember thinking, well, it has to be Liam because that's the storyline that I understand. So
yeah, I thought it was Liam, and like, you know, that was the red herring that the boys were falling for a little bit too. Yeah, I think at least like I remember, I know they were joking about like, well, it's Liam, like really early, but then I remember Justin saying like, I don't know who else it would be, and I was kind of like gratified that I wasn't the only one who like just assumed, oh well, it's probably Liam because like look at all this evidence.
I
think Griffin was saying that like he had been considering like who was not benefit from the deal, and like said that he considered the Sheriff because of like his position in the town.
Yeah, he picked up on the
good job, chaos Griffin, versus smarty order. Pants.
He picked up on the chaos versus order theme like pretty quick, even when there wasn't a whole lot of evidence to really point out that it was the Sheriff. Like if they hadn't gone to that house, there would be basically zero evidence to go to that house. So the whole scene with the Banshee, that was their MacGuffin. Like if it didn't if it didn't happen, they would never have like gone to the right suspect. But
you have to force some things in tabletop games.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's like it's too chaotic. I don't know. Unless you're all like really riding a wavelength. And that's what makes some of the coolest moments in these kinds of games. But like otherwise you gotta give your players some shoves sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
I wanna talk about the law, capital T, capital L.
Ooh, go ahead.
Because one thing that really threw me, I mean, like this whole time, you know, there's werewolves and vampires and wizards and ghosts and there's like supernatural stuff in this world, obviously. But like in my mind, I had been imagining it as just like the Old West, but less problematic and with magic stuff, like magic races. And then we hear about Limdefell, who's like a law, like a demon, a demonic entity whose followers like created the law or something. And then I guess his evil chaos brother Omdefell. Anyway, like I'm listening to this stuff and first of all, it's like metal as shit. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And like this world suddenly became much stranger to me. Like, even there was, you know, Archangel Michael, but that would have made sense if we're just imagining, like, I almost said canonical, historical, like actual, you know, Christian coming up America. Mm-hmm. But like, I didn't, there's like, you know, a weird other hierarchy and whole like lore to this world apparently. And I don't know if this is stuff that is, if it's lore from Urban Shadows or if it's stuff that Travis made up.
Ooh. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
But it was like, it really threw me. I wasn't expecting there to be some like demonic pantheon that apparently factored into the structuring of like the law, yeah. I guess. I can't think of the, like, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? What is like that called? Like police and sheriff's authority and stuff. I guess so.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well,
so when they first introduced Sheriff Connors, I remember how they were trying to make that joke with the, oh, there's a ghost behind you, or his ghost is right behind you. And then Travis was like, so he's a part of a class that they follow, like, laws set down by certain demons that set, like, their religion is their law, sort of a thing.
Yeah.
So Travis, like, introduced it, and so I had, like, an awareness that that was a thing. But I definitely wasn't expecting.
Yeah, I fucking forgot about that.
Well, it was like a very minor thing. It's not like it was coming up in conversation, and the sheriff was doing things like, "Well, I'm going to do this because my demon tells me to." Sort of like it wasn't a theme that was so like obviously expressed. It is pretty cool that every character, no matter if they're like human or fang or fur or whatever, they're tied in some way to something more supernatural. And that's what I really liked I like the way that you described it, which I think is probably the way that Travis is trying to describe it, in that it's basically the Old West minus the racism and misogyny and like added supernatural races and things. Yeah.
Rewinding a little bit, I thought that fucking spectral cashew scene was so funny and adorable, and I was glad that they finally did an intimacy points scene, which ended up being more complicated than I was imagining. There were, like, very specific effects based on their classes.
Yeah, which I think that was pretty neat.
That was neat.
A thing about this whole game is that I'm not 100% sure I know what's going on when they do certain things.
Uh-huh.
But I've come to a point that I'm like, I'm okay with that. Because they're explaining it enough that in the scene I know what's going on, but I don't necessarily know what moves everyone has at all times. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look back at the Adventure Zone Tumblr, when they were first starting out, they were showing everyone their character sheets.
Yeah.
So I kind of, like, I would appreciate knowing their character sheets going into this one, just so that I know what they can do, but it's not vital information. I don't need to know what all of their moves are at all times. That being said, did Gandhi's intimacy, like, did her gaining intimacy mean something bad for whoever she was intimate
with? That's what it sounded like, which was interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't sure what to make of that, actually.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting it because I thought, you know, you would be rewarded for being more intimate with folks. But it, especially considering that Gus's, like, special power was that he could be able, like, he could run through walls. Like, he can run away very easily. So for Gandhi's intimacy action to make it so that it's slightly more difficult for him to
run away. I don't know. That's what it seemed like, which seems counterintuitive, but I just went with it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
in a way, it kind of, like, story-wise and character-wise, if that's true, I love it. Because it's just really funny to think of someone's affections not being useful to you, you know? Like, which is, like, totally, like, a thing that happens in real life.
That's a good way of looking at it. I was thinking that it's more like, when she is developing a relationship with you, it's like you're building loyalty to her. So if there's a situation where you would want to run away, you're, like, less inclined to because you want to stay with her. Like, that's how I romanticize it.
That's so interesting. So that might mean that, like, when you gain intimacy points with someone, the result is not a benefit to them. It's a benefit to you that might be a detriment to them. Yeah. But, like, you... Oh, that's so interesting. And the way they described, like, was so funny. Justin was like... I guess Gus was like, I suddenly feel my ability to escape has been diminished. And then Gandhi's like, that's love, baby. It's just like... Oh, I was laughing so hard. It was such a cute, funny scene. I fucking love Gandhi, okay? Yeah. Like, during the fourth episode too, she was so fucking funny with like the demon book and talking to Uncle Oni. She's just like going straight to Lich Town. I love her so much. She's hilarious.
She is. The relationship between her and Gus, I think, is just phenomenal.
Yes. It ended up being really cute. And she's like that scene where like Clint describes her just like whipping out her like twin derringers and then setting them down on the she's so cool. Yeah. I love this fucking wizard.
going
I'm gonna
back,
miss you, Gandy. I was just saying.
My one note about the book is one, I appreciated that they made a joke about Twitter because I'm on Twitter now and that's hilarious. Topical. But I also was thinking, so her current Uncle Oni is, like, the person that she goes to, but in order to ask, like, pertinent questions, she has to gain a corruption point. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering, you know, if they were to continue with this, would the demon book act as, like, another Uncle Oni? Or would Maybe. It be more like, I'm curious to see how that mechanic would work out, because otherwise, like... If it doesn't quite work like Uncle Oni, maybe it's, like, less useful, but it doesn't cost you a corruption point. Or maybe it's just as useful and it costs you another corruption point, but then what's the point of Uncle Oni? Like,
Well, I'm guessing Travis didn't expect her to take the book.
Yeah.
That's probably something that, like, happened, and then if they continued, they'd have to work out the mechanics of it. But it's really cool.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Interesting, item to obtain.
Yeah, well, I like that it totally went into her wheelhouse, that she saw this artifact and she was like, oh, I'm gonna take it.
Yeah,
because I bet awesome. That's what happened for everything that she uses, is that she just saw it somewhere and was like, oh, I'm gonna take it.
Oh my god, I love her. So twins love triangle.
Yeah,
whoa, that was nuts. And what was funny is that, like, I kind of, the moment we find out Dylan was in love with Jeremiah, I kind of knew, like, metagaming a little here. Dylan didn't do it. Because the McElroys aren't going to make the one canonically gay character be the villain. they're not going to step in that. Yeah. So that kind of, like, definitively ruled Dylan out as a suspect for me.
Yeah.
But one thing that I still can't figure out is why... Maybe I just forgot, but why was the marriage a secret?
I don't know.
I couldn't figure out who they were trying to hide it from.
I don't know that they actually said why the marriage was a secret. That's a good point. Because I know that when they told... let me think about this. When they told Dylan that Liam knew about the wedding, he was like, oh, okay. Well, if he knows... Like, it seemed like he was surprised that Liam knew. I could be reading that scene wrong, though.
I thought they were just saying, we know about the wedding. Oh, maybe. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Is that what they were saying? That Liam...
that part is
maybe
not
Maybe you're
as...
right.
Well, that part is not as clear to me. I'm not actually sure, like, who they were trying to keep it a secret from. They could have maybe thought that if people knew about the wedding, that it would complicate the deal, because then they would be
that's possible, actually.
Yeah, because, and remember, like, in the second episode, when they were at the bar, and they were like, oh, yeah, Jeremiah was in here, or maybe at the casino, they were like, yeah, Jeremiah is in here, and, you know, he was celebrating something, but we don't know what he was celebrating about. Like, I don't know. It made it seem like whatever he was celebrating had something to do with the deal.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Right. And I thought that maybe, like, they were keeping it a secret because maybe their parents wouldn't approve for some reason. But then at the end, they told Joe Blackwell, and then he was like, okay. Like, you know, there was no... I don't know. That was the one thing for me that still is my one unanswered question, I guess.
We'll ask Twitter, and we'll see what happens. It could be
anyway,
that they talked about it, but if neither you nor I can figure out what they were... trying to do. I don't know. I don't know that they explicitly stated why it was a secret.
Yeah, it was weird. Anyway, back to the jail Dylan confession scene. Man, Justin is so good at improvising, like, badass, deep monologues.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that was...
I don't know how he just whips out that stuff. He was good at it as Taco, too, and that's how, like, Taco ended up being this very, like, whimsical character, but then he would randomly just, like, spout fucking wisdom at people, and it would get really intense. And that's one of the things I loved about Taco, honestly.
Yeah. I thought that Gus's speech was really, really very nice. Very good.
Mm-hmm.
Griffin and Clint reacting to it immediately after, I was like,
yeah. Oh, man. Yeah, that's one of the things, again, that's one of the things I love about the Adventure Zone and about the fact that this is people, I don't know, there's something so satisfying about hearing them react to each other in real time. Like, that gives this show and shows like it an appeal beyond, an appeal that is separate from the appeal of normal fiction that's, like, written by a team of people and it's all planned out. Like, something, getting to hear them react to each other and, like, surprise each other is the best.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It really, it humanizes the experience. And it does, I think that, that's probably why it contributes to why we're so fond of them, is because they show us these genuine reactions and it endears us to them. It endears them mm-hmm. to us, I should say.
Yes. Well, I think we're endeared to them too. I mean, not us specifically, but the listening audience. Yeah.
The royal we.
I don't know if I have anything else to say about the story content here.
I don't really either, other than saying if they did continue the series, I think it would be, you know, like they set up the cliffhanger really well.
Yeah, yeah, that was cool. It was cool. I thought this was, like, again, like I said before, very thematically strong. I thought this was, like, a really interesting, well-written story. So, good job, Travis.
Yeah, good job, Travis. You want to maybe start analyzing, since we kind of ran out of things to say about the main storyline?
No, dude, I got some notes for, I got extra notes.
Okay, because I wanted to talk about what Griffin was saying in the ad.
Yeah, yep,
okay.
Hell yeah.
Okay, so there's no new episode next week, but there is going to be an announcement episode regarding what they're doing for Max Fun Drive, and also what I'm assuming it's season two. Like, they're going to announce what they're doing for season two.
So I'm just going to call it. They're going to announce on next Thursday, they're going to announce that they're done with mini arcs and Amnesty is season two.
Yeah.
I'm putting my money down.
I am putting my money down, too. And the reason for that is because they recently opened their merch store again, and there was so much Amnesty stuff. And I was like, well, okay. And as a result, and I've already told Rachel this, but I already ordered the hat and the shirt for my Duck Newton cosplay.
I'm so excited. You're going to look awesome.
Thank you. I already started altering the shirt and the hat. It looks so funny in the hat. And I want to make a sword. I'm going to make a sword with lips.
Oh,
and I'm
my
very
God.
Excited.
Motherfucking beacon, dude.
Yeah.
Motherfucking beacon.
If I can figure out a way to put in, like, some kind of a speaker so that it can talk. But I don't know how to make the lips talk. I have to figure it out.
It's been a long time.
But yeah, so after next week, it's going to be Max Fun Drive. This is Rachel and my first Max Fun Drive. Because I started listening to The Adventure Zone, like, in, I guess...
That true? That's
April.
True.
Yeah. I started listening to The Adventure Zone April, because I was working on cosplay for a convention. And Rachel, I forget how you got into this.
I started listening because I'd seen fan art and stuff on Tumblr. I started to get curious, but I just hadn't, like, tipped over the edge into actually listening. And then you were in town for Anime Expo.
Oh,
and I hung
yeah.
out with you guys, and I, like, mentioned The Adventure Zone or something, and you're like, Rachel, you gotta fucking listen to it. So I went home and started listening to it, and then I listened to it, and then I caught up just in time for 69.
Yep.
That was cool.
For context, that means that you binged the entire thing in about 8 weeks.
Yeah. It was nuts. It was a wild ride. Then I listened to it two more times. And then we started doing Taz Talk.
Yeah, in, like, December. Wow, we've
yeah, fuck, dude.
Grown. Yeah, we've grown with this series quite a bit.
Yeah, hell yeah.
So after next week, we're going to have, they said we're going to get long episodes for both weeks of Max Fun Drive.
Yeah.
Which I'm wondering, because usually they do, like, a bonus episode for Max Fun Drive. So I'm wondering if they're going to air one of their bonus episodes on one of those weeks, or if we're just going to get two new Amnesty episodes. Because if it's going to be Amnesty, or for whatever it is, they don't have to spend time building characters or environments.
Yeah, yep.
They just dive right into a new story.
So, I'm guessing that they're not going to immediately jump into season two. I'm guessing that there's going to be some kind of bonus content, like TTAZZ or something, in like the interim. Maybe I'm wrong, but that's just my guess.
Yeah,
So maybe they do that for Max Fun, and then they start season two, which I'm hoping and praying. Dear Lord, dear Jesus, I want more Amnesty really, really bad.
I can envision one of the weeks being like a TTAZZ, but because they've been doing like the mini arcs, I'm not sure what a new TTAZZ, like, I don't know what kind of questions they would be looking for to answer.
I think the audience would have so many questions about, like, what game was their favorite and, like, how they felt about different characters and different things that happened. And, nothing that would, like, pit them against each other. Yeah. But I can imagine
so many questions. Travis about why the marriage was secret.
Not even just about, like, plot stuff, but, like, the mechanics of, then, like, I don't know, the whole experience. I think, like, this, like, how did they feel about recording once a week? You know, put a burden on us. Can you imagine the burden it put on them?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I just, like, I think a TTAZZ about the last couple months would be super interesting.
I don't know, but we have fun things to look forward to. Yeah. Okay, anyway, so
all right, let's wrap us up.
Yeah. Where can people find us?
Well, if you want to send us a question or a comment, I don't know why I said it like that. you can send us an email at taztalkpodcast@gmail.com, or you can send us an ask on Tumblr at taztalk.tumblr.com.
Great. And if you wanted to tweet at us, we are on Twitter. We are at taztalkpodcast on Twitter. And we'd love to hear from you.
We would. Yes. Who knows what wild things are in store coming up, man.
Yeah, oh, but I am so excited. I'm very excited to be enthralled with new stable characters. Like, getting to know these nine characters in these mini arcs has been very, very fun. And getting to, like, make theories about small arcs has been very fun. But I'm really excited to get, like, to dig deep and... Yeah.
I'm so psyched. I want it to be Amnesty so bad.
And then it's not.
No! And then they're like, I won't die. It'll be fine.
They're like, just kidding. We liked all three mini arcs so much that we're actually going to do a fourth mini arc, and we're going to do season two on that. Okay.
Well, fine. If it's good, I would actually, again, I'm still pulling for a little sci-fi thing. So, man, I wouldn't mind a fourth mini arc.
Surprise, we're doing the space opera.
Oh my god, I'd die, dude. Dude, if that was the Max Fun long episodes, just like they slammed out like a sci-fi.
A one-shot mini sci-fi? Arc.
Yeah, hell yeah, that'd be awesome.
Oh, that would be really good. Okay.
Yep, okay. I think that's it. Okay, bye everyone. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.